Well, as I noted just a moment ago, I had the privilege of working side by side with three outstanding men from Western Hills Church in the hurricane relief effort down in Lake Charles, Louisiana, just this past week. Thank you for all the prayers and support that those of you, it really made a difference if you helped us out. I wanted you to know that. Now, I told these guys that I would give you an update on what we experienced, but they insisted they didn't really do it for any kind of acknowledgement, and so I want to try to honor that. I want to try to respect that. So I'm going to limit my comments, but I still can't resist saying something about each of them. Stan Espelage went with us, and he was like David facing Goliath in the Bible. No job was too big, too gigantic for Stan. Man, he just went after it. Carl Miser was like Barnabas in the Bible, the encourager. And then Caleb Lang, like James in the Bible, he showed the wisdom of the brother of Jesus. And so I appreciated them. We all worked together as a team. And for each of us, it was just an honor to serve the Lord and help people who are in great need. And everyone that we served was so grateful and so thankful. And I can't begin to describe the widespread devastation. It's not like a tornado sweeps a path. The whole city is affected. Giant southern pines and those huge live oaks snapped like toothpicks, or they were uprooted out of the ground. Houses and buildings with roofs just peeled off. We saw so many blue tarps on roofs, I've never seen so many. When we left, 18,000 homes were still without power after several weeks, and many stores and businesses were just not open. Traffic was snarled. You just couldn't get around very well because traffic lights weren't working. Debris is heaped up everywhere along the curb for the disaster relief people to come by and take that and shred all that stuff. Wind and water ruined personal property. Food was spoiled because of lack of electricity, and many dreams were crushed in this time. My heart just aches for the thousands who have lost so much, and they have impossible amounts to repair and clean up, and many of them with no means to do so. They're just relying on somebody else to come and help them, and that's where we try to step in. Now, we are obviously not professionals in cleanup and lumberjacks or anything like that, but God enabled us to accomplish tasks that when I arrived on scene, I didn't think we could do it. I mean, it just looked too overwhelming for us to tackle, but we did. I know one family had trees that smashed down onto their house, and a large portion of the trees were in their swimming pool. How are we going to get those out? They had no means themselves to remove and clean up things, and so your Western Hills Church of Christ crew showed up, and we found a way to get the job done. And I have to tell you, that particular job was like solving a puzzle, how we were going to get everything out without more tree going into the pool. But we sawed, and we hauled, and we got the job done. Another family had a massive oak crash into his yard, a live oak, a huge tree. The whole yard, in fact, was filled with tree or fallen tree and others it knocked down on the way. It looked like it was going to take us more than a week to even clean this up. It was just incredible. And there was no, initially there was no access to even get into the backyard with the tractor to help haul the logs away that we were cutting up. We had to haul the brush, and there was just no way to get it all out because we couldn't even get into the backyard. It was just filled and blocked. But we just started cutting, and we made a way in there. We got the tractor in. We pulled things out. We had the lion's share cleared out, amazingly, in a day and a half. You know, and Willis, the homeowner there, he just hugged us with great thanks. He was so grateful that the Lord spared his house, sent us to help with all the needs, and we were glad we were there. The needs in Lake Charles are so overwhelming. I have to tell you, our efforts seemed puny. It seemed like the boy who was tossing starfish back into the sea, starfish that had washed up on the shore. And an observer was watching this kid, and he said, there's just countless starfish there. You can't possibly make a difference. And the boy picked up another starfish and tossed it back into the ocean. He said, it made a difference to that one. Made a difference to that one. And that's the way we felt. And with your support, we offered what we could. It also reminded me of another boy who shared his meager 5 fish and 2 little barley loaves of bread. And he shared that with Jesus. And so we're trusting Jesus to take what we did and multiply our gift and your gift in helping us. Cars just lined the street waiting to get meals and other household goods from the South City Christian Church. It was just a constant line, of traffic as they handed things out. Most people that I got to talk to in that city were so weary, but they were trying to remain upbeat. Now I have to ask you, what do you think matters? What do you think matters to the people of Lake Charles? Coronavirus suddenly doesn't matter so much. It doesn't. Right now what matters is survival and months of rebuilding after that terrible hurricane. We're learning to build meaningful relationships by making it personal. And we're particularly observing the way Jesus related to Peter and discipled him. And the key is asking 5 important questions that the person we're trying to relate with is really asking in their own heart and mind. And we need to ask those questions as we relate. Last week's question was, do you know my name? I mean, the person you're trying to, do you even know their name? Not just a nameless nobody. Do you know their name? That's the first step in building the relationship. This week's question comes from Luke's Gospel, chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. If you want to find that on your phone app or in your Bible. And the question is, do you know what matters to me? You know what matters to me? Here's how it reads from Luke. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret with the people crowding around him and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge 2 boats left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and he asked him to put out a little from shore. And he sat down and he taught the people from the boat. Pretty good plan. Well, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. And when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. And so they signaled for their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. And when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' feet, at Jesus' knees. And he said, go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. For he and his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men. And so they pulled their boats up on shore. They left everything and they followed him. You know, if you want to build meaningful personal relationships, pay attention to the thing that the other person cares about. Pay attention to what they care about. Now, we like to talk about what we care about. We like to focus on that. But instead, learn the other person's passion. His or her passion might be some activity that they're involved in. It might be family that they're passionate about, or maybe a career, maybe a cause, maybe a hurt that envelops their lives. Just ask questions and listen. Observe. You know, people will generally gladly talk about what they love or maybe the burdens that they're carrying with little prompting. They'll tell you. Or it might be that you can just observe it. It's just obvious by spending time with them, you'll know what they're really passionate about, what really matters to them. Jesus discerned what mattered to Simon Peter, and then he used that to build a relationship with Peter, but also to build a bridge for spiritual things, for ultimately discipling Peter. And so what was Peter's main interest? What mattered to him? Well, fishing. I mean, Jesus recognized that Peter and mates were all about fishing. It was their livelihood, but even more than their livelihood, their lives were consumed with the adventure and the challenge of fishing. They were professionals, and they were all about this, and they loved what they did. I wonder if Peter was like that guy who loved fishing in the country music song by Brad Paisley. It sings, "Well, I love her, and I love to fish. I spend all day on this lake, and troubles is all I catch. Today, she met me at the door. She said, I have to choose. If I hit that fishing hole today, she'd be packing all her things, and she'd be gone by noon. Well, I'm going to miss her when I get home. But right now, I'm on this lake, and I'm sitting in the sun, and I'm sure it'll hit me when I walk through the door tonight that I'm going to miss her. Oh, looky there, I've got a bite. Now, there's a chance that if I hurry, I could beg her to stay. But that water's right, and the weather's perfect. No telling what I might catch today, so I'm going to miss her. Oh, looky there, I've got a bite." Talk about passion. We don't have the knowledge of Jesus. He could see what was in a person. But sometimes it's obvious, or sometimes we can be discerning as well, and the Holy Spirit of the Lord can help us perceive. We can inquire. We can listen when people talk. We can close the gap when we'll listen to another person's heart. You know, on Tuesday, when we were in Louisiana cutting up these large trees that had fallen in the yard of a woman named Pam, we were taking down the crippled garage at her house, and I asked Pam to tell me her story. And she kind of grinned, and then she proceeded to tell. She zeroed in on her own career in news media production. And now she's a high school teacher, and she just loves teaching media production to these students. It was clearly her great passion. It just flowed out of her, and she glowed as she talked about it. And, you know, the thing is, people love to talk about what they care about most. In fact, Pam filmed a lot of the things we were doing. She recorded a video, and she even interviewed us on camera. She wanted to know why we were there, why we would take time off to come down there and help, and so on. So it was a fun time with Pam. But I noticed something else about Pam. As she talked, she had another growing passion inside her, and she let it slip into the conversation. Even though we weren't directly talking about that, it became obvious that Pam is going to be a grandma for the first time very soon, and she was quite excited about it, just as many of you would be. What matters? Do you know what matters to me? I confess that sometimes I just assume things about people without really listening. And I need to hear your story. I need to know where you're really coming from. I need to understand what matters to you most. I need to grasp why you feel the way you do. And I may not fully get it. I may not be able to fully understand, but I can at least begin to close the gap if I will hear your story. We stood around the kitchen table of Jeffrey and Veronica in their house after a Bible study. It was last fall. And we listened to Veronica tell a small part of her story, the way she was treated in a predominantly white school when she was growing up. And I was appalled. I mean, it made me cringe. I felt like weeping at what my good friend was going through, and it made me admire her and Jeffrey so much because of their loving spirit in spite of what they've experienced. And it made me ashamed to think of how I, in the course of my life, I may have, even if unwittingly, contributed to inequities like that, or at least not done enough to stop them. I want to know what matters to you. And I really want you to know what matters to me as well, so that we can build relationship together. Brothers and sisters, now is not the time to tell what you think about all the issues going on in 2020. COVID and racism and the election and hurricanes, whatever it is. It's not time for you to share your opinion and rant and rave like some people are doing. Now's the time to listen, to respectfully, patiently, lovingly hear what matters to someone else and hear why it matters to them. Now's the time to pay attention to why people are behaving the way they are and trying to discern why they're doing that. You know what? Most anger, most meanness, most destructive behavior really just comes from hurting people. Not mean or bad people. It's just people who are hurting. So try to observe people's heart, what matters to them. At times, especially when talking about storytelling, I would urge my college students to sit in another chair. And what do I mean by that? In other words, tell the story that you're going to tell from another person's vantage point. Don't just always tell the story from the point of the hero or the main character. Tell it from somebody else's perspective, how they saw it. Instead of telling the story from David's perspective, for example, tell it from Goliath's perspective. Tell the story of Jesus changing the water to wine from the perspective of some unnamed servants who filled the jars with water and then they served the wine. I mean, what were they thinking when they saw this secret miracle take place? Or maybe you can tell the account of Herod's massacre of the boys in Bethlehem from the vantage point of one of the parents whose son was killed. You know, Jesus escaped destruction, but what about all those other families? Or in your mind, sit in different chairs of your audience, of your listeners. There's the divorced single mother. There's the recovering addict or the senior adult with failing health. There's the athlete and there's the scholar. There are the jobless and the successful. How will each of them hear your story? Sit in their chair. What matters to them? Once you've discerned that, what they're passionate about, then you can tell the story more effectively. It's the beginning of relationship to find out what matters to people. And secondly, the second big thing we can do is then do the thing. Once you know what they're passionate about, do the thing with them. If you can. Like Jesus, climb into their boat. Climb into their world. Climb into their passion with them. Show that you care and try it with them. It will bond you together. Jesus, for example, went fishing with Peter and mates because he knew that's what they loved. In fact, I think it's kind of ironic that he showed Peter that he really knew more about fishing than Peter did. You know, I didn't really care for opera when I was young because I didn't really understand it or spend much time with it, but my wife Brenda loved opera, and so I opened my mind to it. I loved to hear her sing, her beautiful voice, and so I went to many of her performances, of course, and I began to love opera, and I do. We've had season tickets to the Cincinnati Opera. We even got to see Cosi Fan Tutti performed in the historic Vienna Opera House, you know, in Austria. It was amazing. It was unforgettable. And there was a time in my life that if you thought you were going to get me to go to the ballet, you were dreaming. No way. I didn't have any interest in that. My mother tried to get my brother and me to watch ballet on TV sometimes when we were kids. Boring. I didn't want to do that. watching them ballet sounded like torture to me. My brother watched one time, and I remember him exclaiming, "Hey, that would be a good move on the football field." And suddenly, I was interested also. What we didn't know was that some premier athletes study ballet for strength, balance, flexibility, and agility. But you know what? One day the Lord gave me a little girl who loved ballet. And, you know, I've been to several ballet performances now, and I've come to appreciate ballet when before I wouldn't have. Before Abby, I wouldn't have done it. My son, Caleb, grew up loving Legos, and he would sit on the floor for hours and play with Legos. And guess what I did? I got down on the floor, and I played with Legos alongside my son many times. Because you do the thing that matters to them. One of the reasons I wanted to go to help with the hurricane relief in Lake Charles is because it mattered to my brother, who's a preacher at the South City Christian Church. It mattered to him that I was there, that I'd have brought a team to help out a little bit. So if your friend likes to fish, go fishing with them. If it's camping, shopping, music, wood carving, quilting, golf, traveling, Bengals games, go with. You know, maybe you say, "Hey, I've never been mushroom hunting before. I don't know anything about it. Can you take me with you at some time and show me how?" Maybe your friend is raising money for kids with cancer, or they're helping with soup kitchens, or maybe they're holding dialogues between black and white relations, or maybe they're working on legislation to stop abortion. Participate with them. Show them you care about their passion. If your friend is into gay pride marches, I'm not advocating that you do that with them, but you can still be supportive and compassionate, and you can listen without sponsoring or advocating or anything like that. You can seek to understand why your friend is into that, and hopefully that will lead to some healthy dialogues. If your friend likes to bore you with pictures and tales of their grandkids, pay attention. You know, if someone likes to tell you silly jokes that really aren't that funny, well, indulge them. And when I was a kid, I remember my best friend had this huge door-to-door paper route, but it always interrupted our time together when we wanted to be doing something, hanging out doing something. And so many times I carried the bag and I walked along on the opposite side of the street. He delivered on that side and I delivered on the other side. It made the job go faster, and the sooner we'd be back together doing some of the fun things we like to do. Do the thing with them. Paul, my friend, was a bear of a man. One of the biggest men on earth. He was literally Hulk-like, although he wasn't green. But he was a rugged outdoorsman. He lived out in the woods, in fact, with his family on some property that he had inherited. He led a road construction crew. He was a believer, but as I recall, he was not really that active as a church participant. His daughter was in middle school at the time when I became the youth minister. And so I drove out to get acquainted with her and with her family. And he met me out on the front lawn, and he handed me a jar of iced tea that was too big for me to handle with one hand, but he could hold it in one of his big bear paws. He was nice with me, but kind of guarded. And I really wanted to get to know this family. I really wanted to get to know him. His daughter had tremendous potential to lead in our group, and so I wanted to nurture that in her. I wanted to disciple her and some of the other kids to let them grow in the Lord. But so I knew I needed to get to know this family. I found out that Paul had over 100 guns in the house. Now, I'm not a hunter. But you know what I did? I went hunting with him, something he loved to do. And I didn't handle any guns that day, but I accompanied him. I went with him anyway, and he got a kick out of what a city boy I was. Anyway, I did the thing with him. His clan had been living on that property for decades, and as we were out there in the woods, he told me a lot of insider history about that forest and the adjoining estate. I prompted him to tell me more stories, and he did, about his job and things that he experienced there. He told me some tales of barroom brawls where he whooped a whole lot of men. And gradually he began to tell me many, many stories about his life, rough times, how he came to know the Lord. And I just listened. I just tried to encourage him to talk. And the thing that warmed him up to our friendship the most was that I was doing a lot for his daughter. And that's what really mattered to him. And the more she drew close to the Lord and got involved in the youth group, the more he started getting involved in the church, the more our friendship was growing. And you know what? If I needed anything, my friend Paul would be there to help. If you want to move the relationship into the discipling relationship, then show them a better thing to care about. Find out the thing that matters to them. Do the thing with them if you can, but then show them a better thing to care about. Jesus called Peter from fishing. He preached from Peter's fishing boat. He coached Peter into the biggest catch of his life. He was always at the lake with Peter many, many, many times, and he even appeared finally to Peter as he was fishing and called him once again to follow him to the point of death. Jesus knew what mattered to Simon Peter, and so he used that to direct Simon Peter to the things that mattered even more. And after all, I mean, there's a lot that Jesus did about fish and the lake and so on. He created fish on the fifth day. He instructed Peter that he'd find a coin in the fish's mouth to pay their taxes. And he used the fish to tell various parables. And he multiplied the fish when he was feeding the 5,000. And he cooked fish for his own disciples. And he used fish for many illustrations. And of course, Jesus was greater than that guy with the biggest fish story of all, Jonah, who was in the belly of the fish for 3 days before the fish spit him out. And Jesus, in greater fashion, was crucified. He was in the ground 3 days then before he rose from the grave. On that day on the lake, with that big catch, Peter was undone in the presence of the Lord. Jesus opened their eyes to a greater reality than fishing. Jesus planted a seed. You'll be catching men instead of fish. You know, give people a bit of vision, a taste of a higher calling. Spark their imagination about ways they can even use their passions and giftedness and skills for Jesus, for kingdom work, for eternal outcomes. What matters to someone can be the instrument to lead them to coming to Christ or growing in Christ. Paul said, I've become all things to all men so that I may by all means save some. You know, I think about how many times Jesus did this. He knew Zacchaeus cared about money. He cared about being loved because he was the most hated man in town. He's a greedy guy who was robbing people of their livelihood. And so by choosing to go to Zacchaeus' house, of all the people he could have stayed with, Zacchaeus was deeply moved. He was transformed from the greediest to the most generous man in town. He saved a lot of lives. Jesus knew Thomas had a passion for sound evidence in order for him to believe. So Jesus gave him what he needed. And, well, Thomas became a great testimony for Jesus. Jesus knew the woman at the well needed to face her wayward life. And he knew that she could become a tremendous witness for him. And so he confronted her sin, but he also offered her the grace of living water. And man, she brought the whole town out to meet Jesus by her testimony. Come on, you got to hear about this guy. A guy named Will Clark told my good friend Jeff about a salesman that stopped by to visit his office one day. Will and the salesman were telling old athletic stories from their glory days, you know, and kind of top that one kind of thing. So Will told the salesman about his brush with fame. He was on a basketball team, And they showed up one night for a game, and a few guys went into the gym, and they came running back out saying, you're going to never guess who they have on the other team, who they recruited. And they're guessing several names, but they were all wrong. The other team had picked up Larry Bird. Yeah, the real Larry Bird. Okay? It was 1980, and Bird was the NBA Rookie of the Year with the Boston Celtics. 40 years ago, players could participate in non-NBA events. It wasn't that big of a deal. So the opposing team had somehow snagged Larry Bird for their amateur basketball team. Now, Will was 22 years old and cocky and actually irritated with his own teammates because all they could think about was getting an autograph from Larry Bird, but he wanted his team to beat Bird's team. They didn't. They lost by about 40 points, you know. But Will actually scored on Larry Bird once from the top of the key. Naturally, Will has told that story about that day, and he told the story to this salesman. Will offhandedly mentioned that he heard there was actually a newspaper article about this experience of Larry Bird playing on this amateur team, but that he'd never seen the article. Well, you know what? Next time that salesman stopped by Will's office, guess what he brought to Will Clark? Yep, a copy of that old article. Now that's salesmanship. It's wise. Make a personal connection by finding out what matters to the customer, establishing personal relationship, and then you make the sale. So when Will Clark told my friend Jeff this story, Jeff said, can I ask you a question? What question do you think Jeff asked him? What was it like, Will, to meet Larry Bird? Did you get his autograph? Can I see the article? No, Jeff didn't ask that. Jeff asked, did you buy anything from that salesman? See, that's the power of making it personal. You tap into what matters to someone, and then you can lead them where they need to be. And that's true when we're trying to lead people to Jesus. We find out what they care about, what matters to them, and we care about it too. We show that we care about them. Jesus knew Peter's whole life revolved around fishing, and so he used that to build this connection and to lead Peter towards a nobler passion. While Peter loved fishing, Jesus knew something deeper and more profound. He knew what really mattered most to Peter and his mates. And it wasn't fishing. Oh, I mean, they loved fishing. That mattered a lot to them. But it wasn't fishing that mattered most, or family, or friends, or finances, or freedom. No, it was forgiveness. They needed a solution to sin and death in their life. They wanted life now and forever with God. And deep inside, it's what everybody longs for. It's what everybody needs. It's what everybody's struggling with. We know we're not worthy. And those guys didn't know until the miracle happened that he was right there in their boat, in their presence, God in the flesh. What a powerful moment. They felt the transcendence of his glory and the unworthiness of their own lives in his presence, and they were undone. But they also discovered in that moment, God had come near, and they experienced his loving grace. He was offering them a whole new reality, a whole new life, a whole new purpose, from fishing to fishing for men for all eternity. And the Lord's offering you the same today. Hey, none of us is sinless. We're all unworthy. None of us can stand in his presence without his amazing grace. But the Lord has come in the flesh, and he has gotten into our boat, into our world, and he died for us. And he knows what matters to you. He knows what we all need most. And he can take whoever and whatever you are, and he can multiply your impact for his kingdom for all eternity. And if you'd like to humble yourselves before him and allow him to cleanse and repurpose you, would you call me at 251-2232? Let's talk about it.